Hey there, fellow insurance geeks. I'm your host, Rob Galbraith, flying solo today. And we're going to do something a little bit different for this edition of the InsurTech Geek Podcast. We're going to take a look back, not at our greatest hits, but we are going to look at our 7 most downloaded episodes. Let me tell you, it's amazing that we're at this point. It's been one heck of a ride. Coming in at number 7, we have Everybody is Digital with Jeff Shee talking. In this episode, we discussed how digital transformation impacts the insurance industry and what insurers can do to keep up with the times.
Let's go into that now. Let's just talk about that now. Where do you think they're missing the boat? Because distribution is obviously critical to insurance. There are those who have said they're going to disintermediate the agent for a long time. That has not really played out. Because agents are still extremely important to distribution. So where are VCs and the InsurTech, what are they missing right now?
We didn't grow 27% or 47% in population growth. We didn't grow that much more in searches, or did we? But what happened is the cost of bid went up a lot higher, right? Because everybody is digital. And then you have these VCs pouring billions of money into it. Well, guess what? State Farm, Allstate Farmers, Geico, Progressive, they also have billions and billions, but they have more billions than your VC does. So they play in the long game. They're like, okay, you want to drive up the search cost? We'll play this game. We'll drive up the search cost. And then now people like Lemonade, if you look at their CAC, their cost per acquisition, look at Q2 of 2021 versus Q2 of 2020. Their model didn't change. Their people didn't change. Their salary of their people didn't change. Their product didn't change. But they playing this zero-sum game with guys who have Warren Buffett money. It's a sick game, right? So if you are stuck in that Google sandbox, you will forever be an InsurTech 1.0. And we can just look at where InsurTech 1.0 by just looking at Metro Mile, Roots. So in short, if Lemonade doesn't reinvent itself and become a 2.0, they will follow the footstep of Roots and MetroMile, right? Both came up with brilliant concept, but they got stuck in that Google sandbox.
At number 6, we have How to Keep Up with Innovation with Brett Hammer from Grange Insurance. Brett shared some great insights on how insurers can stay ahead of the curve in a rapidly evolving market.
So Brent, you know, yep. One of the things, you know, most people within organizations, I would imagine Grange is different, they are really focused on current year objectives, right? Hey, we want to hit a certain combined ratio. We want to grow revenue a certain amount or whatever. And that's what bonuses are paid on and stuff like that. And so there's very few folks, right? Usually the innovation folks would have a handful of folks usually within organizations that are explicitly kind of exempted from that for the most part and charged with looking beyond this year's current results into future results. So, I started a company basically around this premise. How do you keep up with the latest trends and advancements in the industry? And then what sources do you turn to for inspiration and insights? Because I know this can be a very real challenge. You just talked about the hype cycle. How do you break through? How do you see what is coming next?
I mean, I just listen to a lot of podcasts. seriously, I actually just listened to your podcast with Mike Anse on, he's a great mind, fascinating, very interesting gentleman in the industry. And, you know, that leads me to the fact that I probably spend 50% of my day in one-on-one meetings. And I really try to balance internal and external one-on-one meetings. So I said another way, you know, I like to surround myself by people who are smarter than me. And that's not really self-deprecating. What I really mean by that is you cannot be an expert at everything. In fact, most people are lucky to be an expert at one thing. And so recognizing that, who can I talk to that's, you know, experts in different fields and where there are new solutions being developed, but even more importantly, talking to my stakeholders and understanding what their problems are.
Let's talk about the future and insurance predictions with Nikki Corey from Prudential Financial, made it to number 5. In this episode, we discuss some of the big changes coming to the industry and how insurers can prepare for them.
Let's talk about the future. Let's look forward because Nikki, you and I have been in industry. If you look back at our last 20 plus years, right?
you and I both started in consulting about the same time, then both got into financial services around the same time. We spent about 2 decades trying to solve problems around financial services. And I always like thinking about the future. And there's some really cool things about 2023 that I was not anticipating 20 years ago. I didn't understand how good specific forms of AI would get. I didn't understand how good machine learning would be. I expected processors to be this fast because of Moore's law. I really was a believer in Moore's law, and rest in peace. He just passed away.
That's right.
But there's a lot of, I didn't understand how fast mobile connectivity would be. And that's really impacting how people buy things, including insurance.
That's right.
So there's some things about where we're at that I expected and didn't expect. I'd hoped for some things that aren't here. That's okay. Probably watched too many episodes of the Jetsons and Star Trek, but let's look like to the next 20 years. Give me a prediction or something you kind of just have a gut feel on that's going to be a big thing in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years as we move forward in insurance. Like, you've got to spend as much time as I do probably just thinking about what it's going to look like.
Yeah, but no, that's a very interesting question. Now, you're asking somebody that's in the, like you guys, we're in an industry where in the last 300 years, there really hasn't been that much innovation, right? if you think about it, really, we used to underwrite based on age since the 1600s. Then somebody figured, oh, women, live longer, and that was in the 40s. And then they're like, okay, let's add gender. And then with the advent of HIV and AIDS in the 80s, that's when basically blood tests were standardized. So you see that this has been a long time coming. But that's why I'm saying the next 5 to 10 years will be much more exciting than the last 300 years. So listen, I don't know where it's going to be in 50 years. I don't even know where humanity will be in 50 years. Ask Elon Musk about that. I'm sure he knows. But
half the population.
That we're going to die. We're going to be on Mars. You and I will be on Mars. We'll be permanently frozen to stay young. But I would say definitely, I think there's no reason why protection needs of a customer cannot be looked at holistically. I don't think there's any reason that I need to go to separate people and think about separate products to insure myself when I'm 27 for a car, a house, what have you. Versus when I have a child, versus when I, buy a second home, versus when I have a third and fourth child, or versus when I'm looking at retirement. I think the financial needs, if I were to extrapolate, not just the protection needs, we will have the tools, and let's hope we have the appetite to look at them holistically and dynamically and price them accordingly. So maybe that's not where I think it will be. That's where I would like it to be, because that's in the best interest of the customer. So definitely that. And then in terms of the distribution, a lot of people say insurance is bought, not sold. Then you have the other school of thought. It's sold, not bought.
I was going to say that's, yeah.
yes. And then you have the other school of thought that, there's some people that say, oh no, this is going to be completely appended, the agent model. And I do think in the next, again, 5 to 10 years, we will be somewhere in between. I think companies or insurance aggregators, both in the US and overseas, that have started being direct to consumer only with no agents, have added agents because, a lot of people, before they hit the big red button and commit themselves to a 15 or 30 year contract, they want to talk to someone. And some people need the empathy, some people. Regardless of the generation, I do think people will rely a lot on digital to do the upfront work, and maybe they will still need to talk to an agent. But I do think the agent of the future will look much different than the agent of today. I think they'll be better informed. I think they'll be able to create content, distribute content, really be a life advisor. And I do think, and here I may differ with some of my colleagues, I do think that gone are the days where people would have, and COVID taught us that you don't have to travel in a congested, and because I work overseas, in a congested Jakarta or congested Sao Paulo to meet your customer with an iPad in a Starbucks to sell them something, right? I think there will be tools to be doing this remotely and have the agent in the mix.
Moving on to number four, we have growth at all costs and irrational competitors with Caribou Honing from Semper Varens Venture Capital. Caribou had some really interesting things to say about the current state of the market and what insurers can do to stand out from the competition.
Let's talk about growth at all costs, greater fool theory, because yeah. You know, a lot of growth at all costs was predicated on greater fool theory, that you could offload a company, you would dump massive amounts of cash into spending at a company, ramp revenue without worrying about the ability to be profitable, and then dump it or exit before you had to prove you could be profitable, you know, and hopefully whoever bought you, you know, would be able to bury it in their financials or figure out the profitability model. How has the funding environment changed now with a much stodgier public market not willing to underwrite massive losses and companies that can't make money?
Look, for the most part, I'm a big fan of the pullback in valuations, including public market value. Like it was silly math, right? And gosh, easy for you to say that now, Caribou. but like, it was kind of silly math. And I think there's what we're seeing is a reckoning on two dimensions. And one doesn't bother me at all. One, like, is sort of a different character. So valuations, right? Like valuation, don't think about, oh, well, that's a billion or 2 billion or 200 million, right? Think about it in terms of valuation multiples, right? Oh, are you yep. paying 5x revenue or 10x revenue or 50x revenue, right?
Yeah.
Okay, look, if you are getting 50x revenue, right, and not off of $5, off of 5 million or something, like, all right, you were very good at selling and somewhat lucky, very good, lucky with timing. But that doesn't mean that was like a legitimate valuation built connected to your fundamentals, right?
Yeah.
And so, we've now seen a reversion to something much more historic kind of revenue multiples. And arguably, the pendulum has swung farther. You know, the pendulum, you see a couple of these cycles, the pendulum goes back and forth and back and forth on this. But, you know, look, that's a valuation multiple question. And, you know, we can start to build some sensible ranges around that. You know, I don't have any blame or any sympathy for the founders who raise money at really high valuations or really high multiples, as long as they recognize that they were boxing themselves in a little bit and might have to take money at a lower valuation, something like that. If they took too much money, that actually does start to cause some second order issues for them. And entrepreneurs, you tend to spend to architect your business to the capital you've got.
Yeah.
And so that can be, which takes me to the second aspect, which is much more pernicious if it's in a company, which is if you've got lousy unit economics. I mean, look, mm-hmm. we are in many ways products of our early training, right? My early training was at Capital One, right? We were very rigorous in thinking about the unit economics. And we would look at competitor products, and we would try to reverse engineer their NPV model. And there were lots of instances where we'd like, yeah, we can't actually understand how they're going to make money on that product with our assumptions that we know about even for their business. We don't think they can make money. And lo and behold, a couple of years later, they blow up. All right. Plus one for rational economics.
But when rational economics apply, yeah.
Well, actually, I hate competing with an irrational competitor.
At number three, we have the three big problems with the insurance industry with Hayden Kirkpatrick from State Farm. Hayden talked about some of the industry's biggest challenges today and what insurers can do to overcome them.
Consumers at a very, very macro level have three big problems with the insurance industry. One, it's super opaque. Customers, modern customers in particular, don't care that you have to make money. They don't mind that you have to make a profit, but they want to know how you're pricing, what you're pricing. They want to know where their money's going. And the insurance industry traditionally not been comfortable with that. A lot of the early stage insure techs that you saw, I'd argue Lemonade in particular, did this really well. They really helped you understand, you know, as you add coverages or you increase your limits, you can instantly see how price changes. And that helps customers really understand the price value equation. I think the second thing that consumers really struggle with is the cognitive load and just the understanding of the business model and how it works. Another area where insurers have not necessarily been good stewards for the consumers in this regard. At State Farm, agents do a lot of that work. In Lemonade, simple imagery and very accessible language does a lot of that work. But it's all trying to solve the same basic challenge. The best and highest quality customers want to know that they're getting what they need, they're not getting more than what they need, and that they're getting it right. So if something happens, the carrier's going to be there. And then I'd say the third biggest one is the predictive and adaptive nature of products and how insurance has lagged a little bit. So there's a slide that I sort of show all of my stakeholders where I compare industry carriers versus tech companies like Apple, Google, Facebook. And the simple truth of the matter is consumers expect insurers to be competitive, but they also expect experiences to be developed in the quality that those tech companies develop them. So they want something to be as elegant and well-designed as Apple, that knows them as well as Google, that is as predictive as Facebook, with the logistical speed and efficiency as Amazon delivers, and as curated as Netflix. Woo.
Our second most downloaded episode is The Shape of Insurance, Exploring 3D Printing with Charlotte Creech from USAA. Charlotte shared some fascinating insights into the world of 3D printing and how it's revolutionizing the way insurers do business.
That business technologist the insurance technologist who has knowledge of the insurance industry and is tech savvy enough to know what the terminology means and what they're really asking for and some of the components of how it works. At the end of the day, though, to pull off execution, you're counting on probably a pretty deep bench of technologists and process people that are outside of the innovation group, correct?
Yeah, for sure. We have a lot of partners, and that's why I said earlier, it takes a village to raise an innovation at USAA, because there is so much that needs to come together. So I definitely don't want to make it seem like my team does everything all by ourselves. It's not the case at all.
No, nor is it at any company I've ever worked with. it's impossible to single-handedly innovate, especially in an organization the size of yours. Rob, bring us home with our final question.
Yeah, Charlotte. So thank you so much for all of your time and really kind of walking through your background as well as what you and your team and how innovation is done at scale at USAA. So my final question is, what trend or technology are you following that you think has the potential to influence and, dare I use that word, disrupt the insurance industry in the future?
Yeah, great question. And I'm really excited about this one. Just my opinion, my own personal research, I am really excited about 3D printed technology and additive manufacturing. It's not a new concept, but I think the application of this type of technology in the insurance industry is going to be really transformational. And why I say that is because, the supply chain has been such a difficult issue for all of the insurance industry through the pandemic and even now. And so being able to own your own supply chain and have more control over the inputs, whether it's raw materials or the cost of those materials or just shipping and logistics of procuring what you need to construct a home. I won't say all of that goes away with 3D printed technology, but a large part of it will be different.
And finally, our most downloaded episode is Innovation Practices on the Business with Niren Chauhan from Zurich, North America. Niren had some really great advice for insurers looking to innovate and stay ahead of the curve.
What are some of the innovation projects that you've been leading that really geek you out?
Yeah, so with your permission, let me broaden that a little bit. Let me also talk a little bit about things that really excite me that are happening today. And then within that, I'll talk about a couple of things that we're also trying to do. You know, as I was saying that technology is becoming cheaper and much more easily deployable. And that is opening so many doors with what is happening. But overall, if you look at what is happening in the space of insurance, I think this notion that has traditionally existed of asymmetry of information between a carrier and a customer is slowly going away. And I think the whole notion of you can go online and you can customize your solution and you can buy it yourself was a huge step in that direction. But that was only one step. You know, as that whole concept broadens, that is the space that excites me a lot, where using data and then ability to process data and then digitally present data, you know, with some insights for empowering the end consumer to manage their risk is a very, very exciting space overall.
Well, there you have it, folks, our 7 most downloaded episodes. Thank you to everyone who's joined us on this journey and continues to bring out their inner geek into the world of insurance.
We're taking you on a journey through insurance tech. So enjoy the ride and geek out. Have a great week, everyone.